Welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. So great to be back with you. My name's Steve Bowes. This is HR Happy Hour episode 161, titled Building a Smarter Workforce. We are pre-recording the show. Today is actually Thursday, May 2nd. We are happy to welcome to our show a great guest from IBM here in a minute. First off, I do want to say hello and a shout-out to our show co-host, Trish McFarland, the HR ringleader, who is a little under the weather today and was not able to make the call and the recording today. So, Trish, when you're listening to this, and I know you will listen back, I know you will rise up from your sick bed to listen to the show once it's posted. Hope you feel better and hope to have you back next week, of course. So I want to get right to it. Again, this is HR Happy Hour 161. My name's Steve Bowes. Our guest is Jonathan Farrar from IBM. He's the vice president at IBM of their Smarter Workforce Initiative. A little quick bio on Jonathan. Jonathan, in January 2013, Jonathan moved to IBM Software Group to lead the strategy and product management for the newly created business called Smarter Workforce. In this role, Jonathan is responsible for leading the strategic direction, product strategy, and research and development of HR solutions for clients to help them create a smarter workforce. And he works directly with Connexa, which is a company that lots of the folks here are in our HR audience would know, Connexa, who was acquired by IBM in 2012. Jonathan has been with IBM since the year 2000, and he's been in human resources for almost 20 years with three different companies. From 2010 to 2012, he held the global HR responsibility for workforce analytics, HR strategy, transformation, and planning. And prior to that, he held senior HR roles in recruitment, outsourcing, and as an HR director, leading HR departments across up to 20 countries in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. So Jonathan has worked in three different companies across his career and holds a Bachelor of Arts and a Master of Arts degree in natural sciences. And I'm going to ask you what that means, Jonathan, because natural sciences, that might be a UK thing, from the University of Cambridge in the UK. In addition to all of that, he's an avid photographer. He's based in New York and can be found on Twitter, which is awesome. I like that, Jonathan. So we'll be tweeting out your handle along once the show goes live. Twitter at J-A Farrar, J-A-F-E-R-R-A-R, and, of course, on LinkedIn. All right, that was a mouthful, Jonathan. Let me just stop and say welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show.
Well, thank you very much, Steve, and it's a pleasure to be here. And just to go back on your point about natural sciences, I think it's a very specific subject, or certainly was at the time at the University of Cambridge, and covered all sorts of sciences from the biological through chemical through the physical sciences. So it was sort of the catch-all for all sciences.
That's interesting. Yeah, maybe I'm just ignorant of that. I hadn't heard that terminology in that context before, because I was thinking, you know, is it, as you said, is it physical sciences? Is it, you know, economics? Is it social sciences? But that sounds really interesting. Sounds like you got exposed to a wide range of studies, you know, from your earliest days in university.
That's correct. Yeah, I did. I actually majored in final year in pharmacology just to capture that, so the final year of that natural sciences was in pharmacology.
Right, right. Well, that's great, Jonathan. Hey, Jonathan, first of all, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today and be on the HR Happy Hour Show. It's fascinating what you guys in the group at IBM are doing, not only from the work you're doing with the Smarter Workforce, you know, things like Watson and the tremendous things that are happening. IBM, even this is a little off topic, but it's amazing for such a well-established large company that's been around forever, incredible amounts of innovation still happening at IBM.
Well, I think so, and that's really what attracted me to the organization first. It was shortly after the chess match, you know, and the supercomputing aspect around that. And, you know, I think the innovation angle of IBM is amazing, and it really keeps people thinking and frankly, very proud of what the organization is achieving.
Yeah, indeed. It's great to see, and it's great to have you with us, Jonathan. We want to talk about the smarter workforce, of course, today on the show, and I thought I'd start off with maybe a little bit of a broader perspective on it, if you don't mind. And you know, we all know, right, especially folks who are listening to this podcast, you know, on their iPhones right now, we know how there's been tremendous change and shifts in technology and mobile and social networks, and it's changed everything how we consume entertainment, how we communicate with each other, how we socialize, how commerce is conducted. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about how these really dramatic changes in technology and in social networks in particular, are changing, or how they need to, how organizations need to change and think a little bit differently about talent management and sort of traditional HR processes?
Yeah, I think the changes that you're talking about are really pretty impressive, and you know, certainly in the 20 years I've been in business and in human resources, I've not seen a change that's captured the imagination and changed the way organizations have to think quite so much. So, you know, we know, you know, I think we can all go on websites and find out all these stunning statistics, but, you know, ones that I've read, you know, 340 million tweets a day,
right.
30 billion pieces of content on Facebook each month, you know, there's going to be 2 billion people using the internet today, and, you know, by the end of this year, you know, we'll anticipate Gen Y will outnumber baby boomers in the workplace. You know, most of those have got a social network. So it's a very different environment. And as an HR professional and thinking of what this means to businesses in managing people, you know, two things really spring to mind that's very different today. One is, you know, the population of today is much more tech-savvy than it ever was. So, you know, think back to the 1990s, and I'm sure not everyone listening to this will have been in work in the 1990s, but,
right.
You know, those of us that were in the 1990s, you came to the office to use the PC. I mean, it was the most technologically advanced part of your life.
Sure, absolutely.
And now, you know, it's the reverse. You know, you sort of go home, and some of the technology that you're on, like your iPhone or your you know, whatever smartphone you're on, your device, etc., is incredibly sophisticated and quick and simple. And that is something that we have to think about. The population of today in the workplace is, by and large, much more technologically savvy than ever has been in the past. And the other phenomenon I'd say is the phenomenon around, you know, global mobile or global and mobile. You know, globalization is a topic that businesses have thought about for many, many years, but the mobile accessibility has just brought a whole new sphere to the workplace. You know, you can, it's not just that we're communicating 24/7. It's not that we're communicating over time zones. It's not that our supply chain or our businesses are global, but it's the fact that we can get hold of people much more quickly, and that those people can be much more readily willing to pick up messages, have access to information,
right,
and knowledge, and share that around the world very quickly. So I think those two phenomena have just, you know, drastically changed how we have to think about people in the workplace.
Yeah, I totally agree, Jonathan, especially on that second point. The technology, and mobile and technology in particular, has enabled organizations, for better or worse, mostly for the better, right, to become global organizations much more quickly than they ever used to, right? In 1980, to become a global organization, that would be quite a bit of work. That would mean maybe capital, tremendous people in every country around the world where you wanted to be. It's a much more daunting task to write to expand a company all across the globe compared to how it is now. It's much different.
It is, and maybe there's a couple of angles to that. One is, as you say, you know, it's enabling organizations to become much more global. But maybe there's a couple of twists on it as well. One is, it's not just your company, but all companies, and therefore the supply chain of your company, whatever that supply chain is, can be global. So your company might just be a one country-based company, but your supply chain might be multi-country and multi-time zone.
Right.
And therefore, that in itself means that those single country domiciled companies still have to think globally. And of course, you know, the other side of your supply chain, your consumers might be across many, many companies as well. You might be the supply chain to international people all around the world. And
yeah.
The other factor is one which has been articulated in, you know, papers, and I, you know, the person I think of is Tammy Erickson in her Harvard Business Review blog a few months ago, where she was talking about the rise of the independent worker or the contract worker. These people who are not really affiliated to one company, they're not employees, but they're going to be more and more of them because they've got a skill that people want, and they can offer that skill around the world. To different companies because they are, you know, the world's expert in something.
Right.
I think it's been termed hyper-specialization or other terms as well. But essentially, it makes, again, as a manager, as a business leader, as an HR professional, it makes you think about, you know, what you want is the best skill for your business. That skill doesn't necessarily have to be employed full-time by your business. And
exactly.
It sounds like from, you know, what Tammy's talking about and what other reports, you know, that type of worker is just going to be more prevalent in the future.
Yeah, Jonathan, I think that's another great point. Maybe we should think about coming back to that as well as we continue the conversation. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, you know, you've come from an HR pedigree, if you will, right? You were a global leader in HR prior to moving to IBM, and now you're at IBM working on these smarter workforce initiatives. And I love your observations about, like, my sense is I go to lots of events and conferences and read a lot as well, and sometimes I feel like in HR that we're a little bit slow to react to these changes. And maybe whether it's social or the rise of the globally distributed workforce or talent on demand, or the hyper-specialization that you're talking about, that lots of organizations maybe, in HR in particular, are a little bit slow in reacting to this. Do you get the sense that HR has been a little bit slower to adapt and react to some of these changes that we've been talking about?
I think in all circumstances, Steve, there's a spectrum of people, and there's going to be some people that, maybe – or reacting a little bit slower, but by and large, the people that I talk to, client organizations, fellow HR professionals around the world, you know, are really grasping this topic and moving it forward. I'll say one thing, though. The topic of, you know, let's take social networks or social media as a topic. You know, the growth of that and the explosion in that first created, I suppose, the business opportunity to think, I can understand what my consumer is thinking. And therefore, it probably, first of all, really hit the business from a consumer angle, from a customer angle. And you know, what can I learn about my customers? Because it's, you know, whatever happens with my brand can be publicized very quickly. And therefore, you know, I want to understand what people are saying. And I think it's now moved to a slightly different angle, which is, well, if that's what the consumers are thinking, you know, what can I find out about what my own people, you know, what the company employees are thinking as well and saying,
right.
and rather using it as a way, certainly that could be in the public field, but it also could be on, you know, an internal social network as well. You know, what are people saying? And therefore, you know, it can be used to gain great insight into what employees are saying and what their feedback is on the organization and their thoughts and how they're innovating things and doing things differently. So I think, you know, by and large, the HR professionals that I meet are very in tune with the technology phenomena. They're very in tune with, you know, using social networks. And more the question is how, what's the best way?
Right, yeah, and I think that's what we should get into next. Let me just do a quick reset, Jonathan. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bose. Our guest today is Jonathan Farrar from IBM. He's a VP of the Smarter Workforce Initiatives at IBM, and we're talking all around some of these changes in technology and in demographics and such, and the nature of work to some extent, and how HR professionals and organizations can begin to start adapting to them, and better still, taking advantage of them. And Jonathan, you raise a great point, right? And I think you're right. You know, I was being a little bit glib, saying, well, you know, I'm not sure HR is really reacting to this. We're a little slow, because there are still at times, right, that propensity to get caught up in lots of the traditional HR work and the routine stuff, the transactional stuff, the administrative stuff, which is still important and still has to be done, but. But going forward, right, as you suggest, that many, if not most, HR leaders in organizations today realize there's lots of potential in all this, is thinking about how can they exploit them. What are some of the ways that, when you talk to organizations that are either doing it well or beginning to explore how they can take best advantage of some of these changes, is what are some of the things specifically around HR and in talent management that maybe the savvy HR professional and HR organization are starting to do now?
Yeah, let me maybe talk about three different things, and then I'll actually add in one where I think, you know, the profession is a little bit you know, maybe could, you know, come together a little bit more.
Sure.
First, let's talk about some of the real opportunities and real things that I'm seeing and where, you know, if collectively all organizations did this, wouldn't it be remarkable? Firstly is hiring people, you know, and not just the system, the process of hiring. I mean, that's pretty much the same as it has been for a couple of hundred years. You know, you're looking for certain skills, you assess those skills, and then you decide to bring someone into a company, a firm, an organization.
Right.
But really about how you don't have to look across everywhere, you can really pinpoint your, almost like marketing. So the social candidate relationship management side of, you know, so you have maybe a technologically savvy applicant tracking system, you can use that to understand your database, you know, whether someone applies for company A or company, department A or department B, you know that they're in the system, you know that you're not going to bombard them with multiple request to hire, you've got a candidate picture, you're building up almost a segmentation of your potential candidate marketplace, and that therefore allows you to really hone in and engage people in your company's brand such that when you have opportunities, you know, a job, you can really go to them very directly. And I think you see trends like that happening in the marketplace at the moment. It's gone from you know, sort of job boards to through headhunting, through advertising and all of those. And then it's gone on to the sort of social referral type thing. But now I think it's getting much more pinpointed. You know, it's almost like a consumer marketing angle to recruitment. I think that is a way in which HR can truly add value to business, getting the right.
Yeah, Jonathan, I'd agree with that 100%. You know, the most compelling sort of case study type things I've heard in the last year or so in and around recruitment technology have all seemed to revolve around that concept, candidate relationship management and that segmentation that you discussed. I'd agree that that's among one of the higher value kind of plays.
But let me add a slight twist on it, Steve, if I can.
Yeah.
Let me now say, how do you know that you're recruiting the right people? So you've gone and you've got great people engaged and you can market and hone in on them very quickly. But how do you know they're the right people? So you could do, you know, you've got loads and loads of data in your organization. You could look at that data. You could look at some assessment around what makes people really successful or really unsuccessful and work out the skills, the very particular skills for very particular job groups, job families that you need. And when you come to hire, you can then look for those skills very particularly, or it could be a behavior, or it could be a competency, or whatever the particular point is. But the point is, by using the data that you've already got, you assess what's very successful, and then you can back that into your recruitment process such that you know, I mean, this is getting to the point of, you know that the person's going to be successful in your company.
Right.
And that is a way of taking recruitment, because we're just talking about recruitment at the moment, that's taking the point of recruitment into a completely different new analytical sphere. And that's what I think is when I think of, you know, it's one example of how to build a smarter workforce. You're basically saying, I'm using today's data to forecast and predict that I know I'm going to get it right in the future.
Yeah, Jonathan, I'd agree. And, you know, and I always bring this up, and people sort of get sick of me bringing up these. I'm a huge sports fan, right? All sports, and I'm always bringing up sports analogies, right? And try to tie them back into HR and to talent management. But it's really the same thing, right? That when you're scouting players for your sports team, a football team, basketball team, or whatnot, you look at that. You say, who's been successful on my team in the past? What types of skills do we need? What qualities do they have? And those are the people we're going to try to recruit going forward. And it's easier probably in sports because performance is so obvious and it's measured and it's tracked, you know. It's transparent, really, but still it's a superb point.
I think it's really true, Steve, because you know, you think of, I mean, let's bring it back to HR, and you look at you know, one of our you know, fellow friends, Josh Burstyn, and his recent report called The Science of Fit. You know, if you know, these people focused businesses that look for this fit, you know, generate, you know, he says 26% more revenue per employee, 40% lower turnover. You know, this is productivity and value add that the HR profession is bringing. And you know, we just talked about recruitment fit based on competency and skill assessment, which is an analytical technique, which, you know, is very valuable. If you can do that, I mean, that's the sort of thing that you're looking at.
Yeah, I'd agree. Jonathan, besides recruitment, right, because we, you know, in HR technology and in some of the work that I do with the HR Technology Conference, technology for recruitment is so, it's so innovative, it's so on the front. We're always seeming to be talking about recruitment. I write about it all the time myself, but are there other applications, whether it's maybe, you know, succession or leadership development, where do you see some other opportunities for organizations to start essentially getting smarter about how talent management is conducted?
Yeah, so, well, learning. Let's talk about learning and development just generally. Not necessarily management or leadership development, but just generally. I mean, you might have an organization of 5,000 people, 50,000 people, 500,000 people. You know, we need those people in the organization to learn and to understand the skills and things like that. Not just from a compliance, you know, you need to know these things to do your job, but that real learning, that knowledge sharing. So there's two angles to this. You know, wouldn't it be great? I mean, let's face it, we know that loads of people have got smartphones and mobiles. I think there was a report a couple of years ago by eMarketer that said there was, by the year 2015, 80% of the world's population will have a mobile phone. Now, I don't know how many of those will be smartphones, but,
right,
you know, we know how many people have got smartphones. You just look around yourself on the street corner and see that it. A lot of those people are, you know, doing email, they're texting, they're using it as a phone, they're looking at apps, you know. So think of mobile learning in your workplace as a way in which that could take it into a different sphere. So, you know, how could you create that entire learning suite so that two things can happen. One is you can push learning to people, you know, as a corporation, you know, these are the great things for you in your particular job at this point in time. Here's a 3-minute video, here's an article, you know, whatever it is. And the second thing is then people can create their own playlists and push them to their own communities. So if you had a social network in your organization, you can say, okay, this is my group, these are my friends, this is my, you know, a bit like you know, Twitter does in the external market. You can just say, hey, here's a great clip. I went to see this client. You know, there's a couple of things. I just pre-recorded a 30-second message, and by the way, you know, help you in your job. Or, you know, here's a great thing I learned from a customer today, you know, when they bought this thing in the shop, you know. Or here's a new product. I've just discovered if I, you know, add these two things together, I get, you know, something better. And I just want to share it with you. Or here's a document I just found. You know, I'm pushing it out to my internal, my company community. But you could do that either formally as a corporation, you know, here's some things to learn, or you could do it individually on a social, you know, social network inside your company as a sort of playlist of things. Just think of
I love that. I love that, Jonathan. I love that expression or that terminology. You've used the playlist terminology, right? Because it feels like if I was going into a new situation, whether it was a sales situation or a product design situation, something that was new to me, something where as an employee I felt like, boy, I really need a little bit more information, a little more knowledge, a little more insight about whatever it is I'm about to do, that the idea that could be an accessible to me, a playlist essentially of helpful information generated by my peers and colleagues, right? Not something that and maybe that just happened. Maybe that just was created, so it's the most recent, it's the most relevant and fresh kind of content that can actually help me accomplish what I need to do.
So I think there's a world and an opportunity here for not just mobile technology and not just learning technology, but actually social network technology in a company as well. So you're really driving you know, the phrase that I think was born many years ago, the collective intelligence of your group, is the 1+1=3 scenario.
Yeah, I think Jonathan, let's talk about that. Let's talk about technology a little bit as well. Again, this is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bose. I'm talking with Jonathan Farrar, a VP from IBM, on the Smarter Workforce Initiative. I'm saying initiative. I don't know if that's the right terminology, Jonathan, but because it's more than a product. It's more than a service, right? It's I don't know. It's a concept. But maybe we should start with that. I wanted to ask you just more directly about what do you guys mean by the smarter workforce? And just because I've seen that term a lot, and I know folks who are interested in these topics are familiar with the term, or at least have seen it. But from your perspective, what do you think? Why is it the smarter workforce, and what's that really about?
Okay. Well, I mean, inside IBM, it's a business, but it's also a concept. It's an idea, and it's a belief. that we can help organizations build a smarter workforce. And really, there's three very core components to why we believe that. We believe that that there are talent management, workforce solutions, you know, call it what it is, but there are, you know, across the whole remit of HR disciplines, there are solutions, applications, technology that can help. That's number one. Secondly, we believe very much that to get the most and to build the most from your people, social collaboration is a phenomenon that inside your company you can get a tremendous amount of value from. So that's the second one, social collaboration. And the third one is analytics or big data. And articulating that, it's not just having the data, but it's what you do with it and how you can draw insights. So the combination really of, you know, a big amount of talent management or workforce solutions plus putting and having some sort of social network inside your organization plus getting insights from big data and analytics, that together, all of those things together,
right,
can help you build a smarter workforce. And by the way, there is no right answer to smarter workforce. There are, whatever your business, whatever your industry, whatever your company, there are different ways to build a smarter workforce. But we think it's those three things together that if you can maximize them, you can have tremendous advantage, competitive advantage.
Yeah, Jonathan, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned there's not sort of one way to do this, right? Or a recipe, if you will. There's not, just a check off the box checklist of things, and all of a sudden this great smarter workforce would happen. I love that point. I think I'd love for you, Jonathan, if you could, to expand on a couple of the points as you've laid out. You know, this concept or this belief, if you will, in the smarter workforce. One of which is a social collaboration angle. Now, I know IBM's pretty famous for their collaborative culture and supported by technology, particularly in such a large organization. I've had the opportunity to see some of the tools that IBM has used internally as well as markets as well. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit about social collaboration, and the technological components or support for it in some of the... Maybe, you know, I know there's some obvious benefits to it, but maybe some of the other benefits that you guys see from introducing social collaboration technology into workplaces.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, so obvious benefits, you know, communicating very fluidly, bringing people together in teams to share stuff. Maybe some of the less obvious things, you know, product development, innovation, you might call it, creativity, teams of people typically, you know, I'm going back 15 years, you know, we need to build something new, you know, you get people together in a room, have a brainstorming session, you know, whiteboards, flip charts, you know, the whole lot. And then it moved to maybe, you know, in the early 2000s into the technology where you could have a joint discussion at the same time via technology on your laptop or PC, where you probably had a sort of virtual whiteboard on your PC, and you could all contribute at the same time. But you still had to be there at the same time.
Right.
And what I see with social collaboration and social networks in the workspace is that you could, you know, throw out a problem and say, we need to come together to, you know, build a new thing. And you just put it out, and you have a community, and the community could be, you know, 100 people, or it could be the whole company, however you want to define it. And in that sense, you are really truly getting people working on a single topic, adding things in. Now, you might want someone to shape and mold that. You might have a project leader that brings ideas to the fore or whatever, and constantly brings them to the top of, you know, the activity within the social platform. But essentially, you're getting people to fluidly and freely, whenever they want to, contribute. And secondly, you're allowing them to do it in their time zone, at their time.
Right.
And then people build off each other. So, you know, while people are working in the U.S., you know, people are sleeping in China. And while people are sleeping in the U.S., people are working in China. So you get in 24 hours of ideas generated. So product development and idea generation, I think, is an obvious one.
Yeah.
I would say, senior sort of... how can I put this? You know, top-down communications can become two-way. So, you know, again, traditional 15 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, here's a message, you know, and it went from, you know, here's a written message, you know, 40 years ago it was here's a memo,
right.
You know, to maybe here's a little video, you know, and different ways. But now we can get into, you know, here's a message and you know, I'll open it up and here's a blog and we can all talk about it.
Yeah, I love that point, Jonathan. I think transparency is one of the big advantages here as well. Because I'm old enough to remember the memo days myself, and one of my first mentors in business was the CFO of the division I was working in, and the first thing he ever did when he received a memo, they're all, you know, written memos. It was a huge U.S.-based corporation. I won't say the name of it again, but he went to the last page. Do you remember the last page of the memos, which had all the CC people, right? Everybody who was copied on the memo. And that was the first thing he always did. And he always told us it's almost equally important what the memo says as who else knows what it says. And because information was currency, right? It was hoarded to some extent in those days, right? And
yeah.
With the new collaborative environments, it doesn't necessarily mean information will sort of float freely around the organization, but at least it doesn't have to. And there's a mechanism for it to be more free, much like Twitter and Facebook and all the social networks have made information available externally all across the world in real time. The same things can happen internally, I think, in organizations.
Yes, I think that's what we're saying, that creativity can be generated in a different way by using a social platform, as can two-level communication be used in a different way with social collaboration. It's purely just different ways that social collaboration can happen.
Jonathan, one of the last things, at least before we start winding down, and this conversation has been fascinating, and I knew it would go really quickly because it's so interesting to me, but I'd love for you to comment a little bit about, you know, as we said, HR folks are warming up to these concepts, they're embracing them, they're certainly aware of them all. What are as you're seeing, the primary roles or the most effective roles that HR leaders in particular and HR professionals can play, say in the world of, say, collaborative technology, openness, or some of the concepts we've talked about? What do you see as the real key for HR inside the organization?
I would say two things. Firstly, I think HR as a practice can really embrace the use of technology, new technologies and mobile technologies. So whether that's social, whether that's a new you know, learning system, or whether that's a new compensation system or whatever, but look at it in a way that people look at technology in their private lives. You know, it's free, it's quick, it's simple, it's easy to use. You know, user experience, I think, is the most valuable lesson that I have learned in sort of the personal world, you know, in terms of how I use technology in my life. And I think most people do. And therefore, HR professionals can think about how should technology be seen and used and implemented in companies such that it's highly user-friendly. The user experience is amazing. So that would be topic number one. Topic number two, I would say, is data. How can HR professionals move into the world of and use data and analytics to really look at the organization, the workforce, and start forecasting, anticipating, thinking about the future, and embed that back into the way that you know, policies, processes, and things happen in the organization? Those would be the two things that I would I would offer as a perspective, and to the extent that, Steve, if I was moving back into a line HR,
right.
You know, an HR director's role, that's what I would go and think about.
Yeah, Jonathan, I think you're spot on both of those approaches. I mean, I think there's loads of opportunity as well for HR professionals to if not take the lead, to assume a role alongside, you know, the business leaders in driving these kinds of projects forward. It's probably more important today than it's been, you know, in the past. Because I think, right, you know, through ERP implementations and in other sort of HRIS implementations, especially mid-sized to larger companies, they've sort of got a pretty good handle, right, on the basics and the essential transactions that they need to manage and the workflows that they need to support. And now it's really time to you know, drive the organization, you know, further and this new set of tools and technologies as well as approaches, right, and offer just incredible promise for organizations, and I think HR folks really have a great opportunity to be out front on that as well. It's Jonathan, you know, just a couple more minutes to go. I think we'll wrap up. I'd love for you to share, if you could, just some ideas around where HR professionals who are interested in these ideas, in these social collaboration technologies, in the concepts, in the smarter workforce, where should they go, really, or how should they get started, and then where can they go maybe for some more information and resources?
Well, firstly, I think you gave my Twitter handle out, and I've got a profile on LinkedIn, so.
Yeah, Jonathan is right, J-A-F-E-R-R-A-R, and then once the show goes live, Jonathan, I promise I'll tweet out your handle along with the show information so folks will see it. You'll get a bunch of new followers as well.
Certainly people can follow me, and I'll share perspectives periodically on topics, and but certainly, you know, IBM, you know, you can look at Smarter Workforce and come into IBM, but more generally, you know, I think it's almost impossible to, as an HR professional now, not to be linked to some website or some organization or some publication or something that you can follow that talks about analytics, social media, technology, and all of these things. So, you know, keep an open mind. You know, but certainly happy for people to follow me and listen to what IBM's doing in this space.
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan. I appreciate that. And of course, I'll pitch my HR technology conference as well. We'll be certainly covering, we've got a couple of really interesting sessions that are going to be lined up in and around social collaboration and technology around collaboration, as well as collaborative. Jonathan, you mentioned learning early on. We've got a great session coming up at the conference in October around collaborative learning and technologies that support collaborative learning. So all those things will be there as well. And I don't want to let the cat completely out of the bag, so I won't, about a special session that we are close to lining up as well that would interest our friends at IBM. That's all I'm going to say about it. I can't leak it because it's not officially locked in yet. But Jonathan Farrar from IBM, VP of the Smarter Workforce, I want to say thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. You can follow Jonathan, of course, as we said, on Twitter, jafarrar.com. You can check out IBM, Smarter Workforce Initiatives as well. And, you know, hopefully, Jonathan, maybe you consider coming back on in the future. I'd love to continue the conversation. It's fascinating, and I think we're really just at the beginning of this, these topics for HR professionals, and I think it's there's loads of opportunity going forward.
Well, I'd love to come on, Steve. Thanks for having me. Don't leave it another 161 episodes for me there.
I'm absolutely right. I know. 4 years in, we find. In fact, Jonathan, I think you're my. Are you my first IBM guest on the show? I think you might be. I'd have to really think hard back through the archives, but I think you might be. So that's fantastic. I'm so glad we were able to do this, and really appreciate the time. And I want to say thanks to the folks checking out the show. I appreciate you sort of bearing with me as I work through this the new sort of style of the show, doing them on a pre-record basis, but I think that's hopefully going to work out for everyone. Of course, you can check out the show always on iTunes. Just search in the podcast section for HR Happy Hour. Listen back, download the shows. Of course, you can always listen to the shows online, blogtalkradio.com/Steve-Bose. All the shows will be there as well. Again, Jonathan Farrar from IBM, thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. We'll be back probably in about 2 weeks with the next podcast. So thanks, everyone, and take care, and so long from the HR Happy Hour Show.